This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Just like Leicester City this season. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus. Rewards registration required, points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
You are watching and listening to Chris and Leicester Till I Die TV on YouTube and your favourite podcasts.
Hi everybody, Jerry Taggart here. Now be sure to watch Chris and Leicester Till I Die TV by subscribing on YouTube and following them on social media for all the latest Leicester City news and information. Come on, you foxes!
The net.
You're watching Leicester Till I Die TV.
Watch us on YouTube.
Listen on your favourite podcast platform.
Or ask your smart speaker to play the podcast Leicester Till I Die.
Subscribe, like, follow and join in now.
Right, Chris.
All right there, all right the back. Good evening, everybody. Hello, fellow Fox fans. How the devil are you? Apologies, first of all. We clash with England tonight. Are you bothered? I'd forgotten it was on, to be honest with you. And we're going to come on to that later. It's interesting timing because we are going to be coming on to that. This is Leicester Till I Die. You can find us at Twitter, at Leicester TID, Facebook, Leicester Till I Die, the group, and YouTube, Leicester Till I Die TV. And if you're not watching on YouTube, please get over there and give us a subscribe. It would mean an awful lot and help the channel grow. And if you prefer to listen to us rather than watch us, and we've got, obviously, the football woman's totty on with me tonight in Julian, so why would you not want to watch? But if you prefer to listen back, you can catch us on all your favourite podcast platforms, including Amazon, Apple iTunes, Google, Anchor, Spotify, and Podcast Addict. I will actually get Podcast Addict correct, or I'll need to get a new set of teeth. If you've got a smart speaker, just ask yours to play the podcast Leicester Till I Die. You have to say the podcast, otherwise I think you get a half a dozen funeral directors coming up. So welcome along. Yes, this evening it is the X on the Pitch show. And I have to be careful how I say that as well. And what have we got coming up tonight, I hear you ask? What have you got coming up tonight, Chris? There you are. I told you I heard you ask it. We've got this. Yes. Do we bring back the reserve teams or go with Pep's idea of B teams in the lower league? And what's going to happen with the Newcastle takeover? What's the consequences for Leicester City? And transfers? How did it affect the players involved? And internationals, we're playing tonight. Too many too often? Great timing. We're going to find out later. We'll certainly have a discussion about it. Talking about the football woman's totty, let's bring him in now and say good evening, Julian. How the devil are you, sir?
Well, I've never been called that, and I forgot to do my hair tonight as well, so I don't feel quite like that, but let's give it a go.
I'm sure that we're lined up ready to do it for you. Nippon, good evening, sir. How the devil are you? As you always say back to me. And my daughter Heather, good evening. I know the devil is Papa. Papa is very well. I need to talk to you. Yes, Heather. Go subscribe to the YouTube, everyone. I'll give £10,000 to whoever subscribes in the next 10 minutes. You would never, that is why you're not in sales, Heather, but you are in psychology, which worries me a little bit, to be honest with you. But a lot been happening, Julian.
Yeah, there is. There's obviously a lot of changes. I think we're going to touch on that later, you know, with Newcastle. You know, England are playing tonight, and there's a few bits we need to talk to about that, and then obviously the level of the game and the way it's developed, and I think there's some good topics in tonight.
Well, let's get on with them, as they say. And of course, at the end, if you want to put any questions in the comments, if we've got time at the end, we'll certainly put those to Julian and see what he says. Always interesting to get an ex-player's point of view. They know what they're talking about, where of course we don't. Well, that's what Julian tells me. We will see. But we're going to start with this. Pep's had the idea, and I know they do it in Spain too, I think it is. I'm not sure if anywhere else, about having Premier League B teams in the lower division. So I'm presuming they're talking like League One, League Two. Now, I know I'm an old bugger here. I think I'm probably older than you, or definitely older than yourself. But I can remember years ago when you had reserve teams and you had separate leagues and they were run separately. So it wasn't a case of, because, you know, your team's in the Premier League, therefore you were, if they were run as sort of separate entities. But anybody who wasn't playing that week in the first team squad, but was sort of, you know, over the under 21 age group, would play in the reserve teams, and it got kept you fit. I mean, you know, when you look at, say, somebody like, let's say, Daka or Inacho, when they're not playing, they're basically not getting game time, and, you know, they're not getting to know their other players. Is that not a better idea?
I think so. You know, from my experience, and the reserve league in my time was absolutely fantastic. It was called the Pontins League, sponsored by Pontins, obviously. And yeah, it was like
the clues there.
But it was like you said, if the player, it doesn't matter who they were, what status they had, if they weren't playing at the weekend, or if they were being on the bench, they would be in the reserve league. And I know Pep's talking about putting B teams in, but one that pushes out other clubs, really, unless you make the leagues bigger and then you've got, you know, more contracted, you know, fixtures. But the Pontins League at the time was so competitive. I mean, we even had, I remember being at Chef Wednesday, and we had a bonus scheme if we got from the second division to the first division. And, you know, to give reserve team players a bonus, I'm not saying it was the biggest bonus of all time, and it absolutely wasn't. It lasted as a night in a pub, as I remember. But
those are the days, eh?
But the thing was that, you know, I played on Anfield, I played at Old Trafford. Yeah. I played at Goodison Park. In fact, I made my debut for Chef Wednesday at Goodison Park in the reserve team against a very strong Everton reserve team. So I sort of see what Pep's saying with the B teams, but they were our B teams. And now they seem reluctant to play them unless it's in a professional match, whereas they were considered professional matches back in those days, and they were unbelievably, you know, competitive. And, you know, we need to get back to that, but it seems, I think, like you were saying, you're an old bugger, Chris, it seems the mentality has come away from where that was. Yeah. And I think, you know, younger pros, particularly, you know, the English lads coming through, are suffering from this mentality because the bigger clubs are just signing players rather than bringing the talent through.
Yeah, and you've got, I mean, there's 24 teams in, like, League One and League Two. I don't think you could do it in the championship at all. But, you know, it's the, not necessarily the fitness levels, because obviously they're training every day and you've got, like, you know, the new Seagrave training complex, which is amazing. But it's just, you know, you can't expect a player to come on for 10, 15 minutes, possibly every other game, and know exactly where his colleagues are going to be. You know, we've seen it when balls have been, you know, Vardy's gone off and balls have been played through and Dakar's been on, and Dakar's not been there because he doesn't know, you know, because he's not been playing. And you've still got the under-21s, and I know you can put some overs in there, but you just keep the unders for the unders and let them progress. And, you know, you get a 25-man squad and you can't play all that 25-man squad every week.
No, and I think the problem with the under-21s and the older players playing in that is, and I think I've alluded to this before on the show, is that the games aren't competitive. They're played at such a slow pace. They're played on training grounds with no fans there whatsoever. And again, going back, you know, 30 years, which is when I was playing reserve team football, is that, you know, fans came in, and actually fans came in to watch reserve team players. And if, you know, if we had Chris Waddle, which he did play in the reserves, and Steve Nicol and John Arks and players like that, fans would come down and watch the reserve team and watch the players. But then they'd also be aware of developing players that were coming through, and they'd got sort of an affinity and a relationship with those players, and they'd probably willing those to make it through to the first team. Whereas now, everyone is so focused on the first 11 and, you know, the subs that go with it. And you're absolutely right. And the ones who aren't in that first 11 and aren't getting the game time, they are really losing out on, you know, competitive match time. And then what we do see is that they send them out on loan, but they send them out on loan for a season. And I don't know what that does to a player. It's more like the manager saying, like, I don't need you this season, off you pop, and we'll see how you get on and how you come back. And I don't know what that does to a player's, you know, confidence, if I'm honest. So, you know, for me, keep it in-house, get this, you know, if they could get reserve league, I don't imagine they ever will, but it was an amazing thing at the time. And I particularly remember playing for Rotherham United, my first club, and we played Nottingham Forest in a reserve team fixture. And Brian Clough being Brian Clough, it was the week before they played in, I think it was a League Cup final, so this would have been early 90s. Mm. And he put out virtually the first team, and he said to them, go and play for your place in the final. And that was a great experience for us as young lads. You know, I think I was marking Nigel Jemson, and there were all, you know, all types of first team players on the pitch. And it was just great for us to bring us on. But as that got bigger and bigger with the bigger clubs, obviously you had sort of fringe first team players playing against fringe first team players. So it was super competitive. And the fact we don't do that now just seems ridiculous.
I mean, Rob says here, what's wrong with Premier League 2? I mean, I think that's basically what we would be alluding to. But you would have, you know, you could have Derby reserves in that top division of the reserves because it's done totally separate, you know. And, you know, you get teams like Chelsea, they go out and they buy all these youngsters up and then just loan them out to lower league clubs with no intention possibly of ever actually, very few of them will actually make it through. But, you know, I mean, I don't know if you were around there, but Friday night football at Filbert Street, you know, the crowds would go. If, you know, if you've got somebody like Madison Evans that's been injured and are slowly making a come, you know, wanting to make the comeback, there's ideal games for them. And they're not up against kids, to be honest with you, who are out to make a name for themselves against the big names. They're there in competitive matches, playing their peers. And you would go, oh, God, we're going to see Luckman, or we're going to see Nacho play tonight. And it gives them the playing time.
Well, on the fan side, I think it's a great thing for the kids because you can take your kids. It's not as crowded. It's not as bustling. You know, you don't have to worry about parking. You're going to walk straight in. And you are going to watch, you know, like I say, back in my day, you'd be watching three or four what you would call regular first teamers, you know, on the pitch. And I totally agree with what Rob says, but for us, the Premier League 2 was the Pontins Reserve League. That was the Premier League 2.
Yes.
You know, but it's now that we can't play first team players in a reserve league because they're too big for that. And again, that comes into it, you know, is it the money side of it? Is it that they're not going to play in that league? Are they not going to put, you know, the full effort in? Because again, those days where if a first team player went in the reserve team, and he didn't put the effort in because he was a bit naffed off that he wasn't in the first team. He wouldn't be in the first team Saturday or the Saturday after until he started to pull his finger out and put some performances in the reserve team and help the younger players come through, which again is another absolutely fantastic product of that, is that you've got these older players with the younger players and talking them through games, and the experience that gives younger players, it's like phenomenal, but they don't get it these days because, like you say, it's an under-21s, and they might have one or two older players in, but they've not got the mix and don't feel like they're on a level playing field as we did in those days. And, you know, for me, it was just the best grounding, you know, I could have had as a young professional.
I mean, Frankie the Fox there, be careful how I said that. Loan spells give players regular competitive football and enhances player development. Totally agree with you. And I know, in answer to that, Frankie, I'd say Kieran Dewsbury-Hall. Last season, he went to Luton. He tore everything up at Luton. He was winning awards left, right and centre. So he's in our squad now. For the but how much playing time is he getting? Last season, he was playing week in, week out, which has probably made him the player that he is now when he comes on. But this season, he maybe comes on for 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there. We're not going to get the same player because he's not playing as much as he was last season. So, yes, I agree with you, Frankie. The loan spells work up to a point. But when those loan spells have worked and that player looks really, really good and we bring him in, we're not giving him playing time. Daka, everybody's saying, why weren't we playing Daka? Because at that time, it wasn't the position for him. But if he's the reserve team, I just can't understand why. And I think it was it Kevin Keegan at Newcastle was one of the first managers to get rid of the reserve team. I could be wrong there. I just think, and who would we get rid of? Like you say, Julian, what would we do? 24 teams in those two divisions. Surely we can't make it any bigger. So our team's going to drop out?
No, and you know, going back to that previous comment, I do agree that they do bring on your development. But for instance, at Sheffield Wednesday, I went to play for Shrewsbury, who were in League Two, and Wednesday were Premier League. So was that going to benefit? Was that going to give me enough development to get into a Premier League team? Maybe not at the time, and it was great for me because I went there for 2 months and played solidly for 2 months with a great set of lads and a great manager, and I loved every moment of it. But it was probably that I needed to get away because even in the reserves, my sort of levels were dropping because I could see that I'd not got a chance to get in the first team. So for me, it was like a sabbatical, get away and go and enjoy myself, for a couple of months. But then on the other side, when I was at Leicester, I went to Huddersfield, who it was a very competitive season for them. It was the Great Escape. And that really was bringing me back from injury. So there's two different sides to the loan, And these days, to be fair, the bigger clubs are sending them to very, very competitive teams. So I do sort of get that, but is it enhancing the way they're going to play in your team, in your system, the way you want to play? There's a few differences there, but it also says to me when a manager sends a player away for a season, in your head, I've been on loan for a month and I've been on loan for 2 months and I've been called back after a month and, the team needs you and you're back in the squad and that you feel good about that. To say, go away, I don't need you this season, for me is a total, different mindset to get through.
But I think you can run both of those things side by side. You can have your reserve team and your reserve league and still the level below that, loan players out. It's just like I say, I use the Dewsbury Hall example, great at Luton, bring him back. He's hardly getting any pitch time at the moment. And we look at the League One table. In League One, you've got Wigan Athletic, ex-Premier League, Sunderland, ex-Premier League, Sheffield Wednesday, ex-Premier League, Ipswich Town. You've got some big names down there, and you're expecting them to, drop out. League Two, you've got Swindon, you've got I'm sure you've got some of the Portsmouth that we got in there, but Oldham, who do you take out, and is it fair on other teams? And then what happens, and I was reading before, sometimes in the Spanish league the B team gets further in the cup competition than the A team does.
And then can they play the A team and the B team? I don't know how that one works. I mean, exactly. I think for me, there's got to be a strong case for the reserve team. I think if you put B teams in, like you say, you're pushing professional clubs with a lot of tradition and history, out of the league. That's totally not fair to say we're a massive club. We deserve to have two teams in this league. It shouldn't be allowed. I don't agree with it, in the slightest. And I know going back again to the Pontins League, I remember the first sort of time when you could see the shift in movement was that Manchester United moved their games from Old Trafford, I think it was to Bury. I remember playing a game at Bury against Manchester United reserves, and that then was the start of, we don't want that reserve team football. Yeah. It was like, we don't want it on our pitch. I mean, the technology they've got on pitches and the state that pitches are in now, which is absolutely pristine week in, week out, full of grass year round. I can't see why they can't handle a couple of games a week. And, you know, the only answer for me is to bring that back. I don't see it happening the way that the game goes. It's about money. There's a lot of egos involved. But, you know, if you made a competitive reserve team league again, which would be a mixture, like you say. So if you've got this 25-man squad, you've got 11 starting. I mean, there's like 14 missing out for a start. A few subs come on. You've got plenty of players there to put in there. And then it is this about bringing your young players through in a very grown-up, very, very professional Premier League environment, albeit, you know, the reserve league. But right now, they're not. You know, they get farmed out to lower leagues. And I think the development would be much, much, much better and much quicker to bring them through in that environment with the players that they're at that club with, and they can do it.
It's almost like there's a step missing on the ladder, isn't there? You know, as you said, they come back from, and no disrespect, from a Plymouth, a Barrow, a Stevenage, whatever, and then there's nothing up. And I say, I know I've said it twice already, but Kieran Dewsbury Hall is a perfect example for me. And then you were saying about the pitch. I mean, you know, a lot of the teams now, and certainly Leicester, they're letting the ladies' teams play on the main pitch. So, like you say, these pitches can take more than one game. And we are playing, because we're playing Europa League on there as well on a midweek. So, it can be done, I think. And even if they do them at another ground, let's say you go to watch the fact that you're going to see players that you might not be able to get a season ticket, or, you know, I just think it's a missed opportunity.
I agree. And do you know what? Before you said missed opportunity, that's exactly what I was going to say. There's a thing of fans who might not be able to get to first team games coming to watch the stars that they want to see. There's the opportunity for the players to play. You know, I've seen reserve team fixtures in modern days on training grounds, and they are a million miles away from what you see on a Saturday, Sunday afternoon in the Premier League. And I mean a million miles away. They are like training ground practice sessions. And I don't see the benefits that anyone gets from that. And, you know, like I say, for me, will it happen? I don't think so. And it's such a shame, because it could do. It would enhance the game, you know, anyway. But particularly for English youngsters coming through, would be absolutely amazing. And it's a big, big shame.
Rob, got your question. We'll try and fit that in at the end with Julian. The other thing is, just don't buy so many bloody players. Put it bluntly, you know you've got 25. And that is literally two for every position and a couple of spares. Do you need such big squads? Because you've got obviously the, you know, your academy players as well. Don't spend the money.
I know, but I think, you know, when you're looking at the real top level now, and again, I always say a lot goes down to money and, you know, success. I mean, I know we're going to talk about Newcastle in a bit, and, you know, they've come in straight away and said that their aim is, you know, to win the Premier League and be competing at the top. So, you know, if they spend the funds wisely with whoever, that's going to be another one in the mix. And when we talk about top six and who should be in the top six, that dynamic's going to change again with another, you know, club coming into that foreground. And the thing that I would point to is that, you know, Man City won the league, and then they had injury to Laporte, and they had terrible injuries at centre-back. And Liverpool then went to Munda League, and then Liverpool had terrible injuries at centre-back. And there was just that thing of, they did have cover, but the cover then got injured. And, you know, and I suppose at that level, when the money they have available, they will always say, you know, we need this kind of squad to compete at the top and to keep being successful for the fans. And the fans would agree with that. And those two seasons really highlighted it for me. And it was both down to central defender injuries, you know, cost the two teams the title the year when they were defending it.
Yeah. You mentioned Newcastle, you mentioned central defenders. We're going to come on to that straight after this.
Fancy an idea with the egg?
It's the X on the Pip Show with Chris and Xbox Julian Watts. Looking back at the past week at all things Leicester City.
How can a club go from being absolutely loved and most people's second clubs to being hated within the space of 24 hours? Call yourself Newcastle United. I mean, I actually had a chat last night, Julie, with a guy, a Newcastle United fan, and does his own channel, and was really pleased for him, because at the end of the day, I don't begrudge them being taken over at all, I mean, you know, not so long ago, that was us. And, you know, when you look at Arsenal moaning about Arteta and they're not qualified for Europe for a season, try living where Newcastle have been for the past 14 years under an owner that appeared not to care, although it looks like it's going to work out in favour of them with the pricing and what have you. Suddenly, everybody's hating them because they've been linked with every player and every manager going, you know. I mean, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing for the club. I mean, aside from obviously there's some sort of reasoning for, you know, with the country involved and things like that, that have, you know, halted the progress of the takeover, which I'm not going to get involved in. I don't really know, you know, what's about that. But I think for the club itself, for the fans themselves, they'll all be delighted. And I think with Mike Ashley, he's just a businessman and he's not, you know, and I think a lot of people will take over clubs and will probably throw more money than they really want to at the club, and sometimes more money than they can afford, especially historically. And I think with Mike Ashley, he's just run it as an absolute 100% as a business, and that doesn't really sit well with supporters, because it means difficult decisions, it means tight budgets, it means every transfer window Newcastle are talked about because they don't look like they're going to, you know, buy anyone. You know, obviously, when they were blessed with having Rafa Benitez, who we spoke about last week, and, you know, I held him in such high regard, and, you know, then they brought in, you know, Steve Bruce and the struggles that, you know, he's had as a manager. I mean, they still have a squad of very, very good players, but it's just that the expectancy, and a bit like us in the last few years, you know, even this season when we've had the success we've had in the last 5 or 6 years, but the success they've had and the expectancy, and then it is really gone to the other end of the table. And it would be like us now going to the other end of the table and saying, blimey, what's happened? We won the league a few years ago. Mm. We've just won the FA Cup. We've just done this. We're in Europe every year. Why, you know, what has happened? And we'd be, you know, dumbfounded as well, I suppose. And if it was, you know, the same owners that we've got now, and I would never have envisaged that happening, there would be the frustrations from ourselves as well. So I think that's what they've endured. And I think for the fans, they'll just be absolutely delighted. You know, for me, like I say, he's a businessman who's just, and he's maybe they should be grateful that he's kept the club going. Maybe they should be grateful he's kept it afloat. He's done it in his way. It's just not pleased everyone. But right now, Newcastle United is a Premier League club, and he's brought, you know, some big finance in who've taken over eventually, and everything looks bright. So they might look back one day and thank him, but I doubt it.
I doubt it as well, to be honest with you. I think that's an understatement.
I'm trying to be nice to him, to be honest.
I actually watched, it was an old interview on Sky, did it about 6 or 7 years ago. And, you know, the guy was saying, you know, I am not a rich, but I am not an owner like Manchester City have got, you know, like Liverpool have got. Yes, I'm a rich man, but it's all wallpaper money because it's all in shares. And I can't go out and just give the club 25 million because I haven't got 25 million spare, you know. Yeah. And you're thinking, yeah, that's fine. And then, and the words have failed me, but, you know, now Newcastle haven't got to worry about this facet, Fair Play League, because he has kept them in check. They've not gone out of business. And sometimes I think, you know, we all want an owner that's behind the club, that loves the club, but, you know, sometimes they can go absolutely mad, and because it's the club they want, they can want success too much and throw money at something that's just not. Look at Derby, you know, as best as they tried, they were just throwing money at it season after season, and it didn't really work. Or you might end up with another Leeds who try to live the dream.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and it's taken Leeds so many years to recover. And that was, I mean, from my recollection, I remember David Leary being the manager, and the aim was, and they really, I think they had a really good season and then invested heavily because it was Champions League and what they were going to do next. And it was a disastrous season. And, you know, that in itself just, you know, buckled the club for years and years to come. And like I say, you know, hopefully some days, you know, Newcastle fans might have a better view of Mike because he's, you know, they're in a decent position. I know they don't spend a lot of money. They probably, you know, had to, winding their aspirations. But, you know, they've signed Joe Linton, they've signed Wilson from, you know, who I think is a fantastic player. Would, you know, probably a great fit for Leicester, if I'm honest. But, you know,
they I would have had him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So they have spent, you know, a little bit of money. And I look at the team and it's not not horrendous. And, you know, it's like I say, they're still challenging in the Premier League. With Rafa, they did ever so well. Steve Bruce, I've sort of been, he seems quite negative in his interviews. And I'm not a fan as a, you know, he's a great player, but as a manager, he talks himself down and he's always woe is me, everything's going against him and what have you. But he's not got the worst squad of players. And I suppose it's how your outlook is and how you go and put them out on the pitch. But and if I'm honest, I don't see him lasting that long. But you know, that's just footballer there, you know, and I think he knows that. And I think there's a few comments he's made this week, which again, I don't agree with when you're in the hot seat like he is. But you know, they're going to come in with a lot of ambition, and I don't think they're for one minute going to think, because they'll have been thinking about this for a long time, they're going to think that Steve Bruce is the man to take the club forward. So, you know, and the names that have come up in the press today, obviously Brendan, Gerrard, people like that, you know, they're going to be ambitious, they're going to have a checkbook, and they're going to want to move forward. And they're going to want to move forward really, really quickly. And that is, again, another... not a problem, and I always talk about money, but that is the thing today. Things happen, and fans just want that instant success, which is so, so difficult. And Rob's just made a comment there, which I totally agree with. Great to have Newcastle competing at the top again. But then it just puts that extra team in there, and every one of those, maybe 8, 9, 10 teams, they're all saying every year, we should be in the top four. And you don't have a right to be in the top four, as we're finding out this season.
And I think as well, with you know, we've got to be careful we don't turn into Scotland, where every season, and it is becoming like this, you know, the top four is going to be the top four.
Yeah.
You know, we've tried to break that up for the last couple of seasons, haven't quite managed it. But you know, where everybody's saying now, I haven't spoken to a fan of any other club in the Premier League who said any other team other than the four that are in it are going to end up in the top four. You know, the Man City, your Chelsea, your Liverpool, your Man United, in whatever order. It'll be interesting It'll be interesting to see how Sky react, because they've got their... well, let's not call them the big six. Let's call them their favourite six. And it's whether they will allow Newcastle into that club or not. I don't know what Newcastle's fan base is like worldwide compared to the others, because they have not been there for so long. But I want them to do well, but I don't think, you know, all this thing about who's linked and this and who's linked that, it's all newspaper talk at the moment. They've only been in the job 2 days.
It is. I mean, all the newspaper talk is tomorrow's fish paper, isn't it? So they get down at the chippy. But, you know, I think the biggest decision they're going to make in the short term is that the manager that they bring in, it's going to be so important, because the manager is going to bring the players in and going to set them up. And that's where, you know, the success comes from. And if they make that wrong choice in the first instant, and I'm sure they've got a shortlist, you know, that's going to be the crux of how successful they're going to be in the next 6 months. And I think they're wanting, you know, by the way they've talked as they've come in, and by the fact that this takeover has been sort of bubbling for such a long time. I think they must have known for a while it's going to go through, but just know they had to jump through hoops to get there. So in all that time, there's going to be so much planning on the football side gone on in the background, which is not going to become apparent until obviously now that they're in the hot seat. So I think it's going to be a very interesting couple of weeks when we get back after the international break. Massive decisions for them to make. And, you know, obviously the biggest one will obviously be, you know, who the manager is and what funds they give him.
Yeah. Ant's Leicester fan channel, go give them a follow. Hi, Ant, how the devil are you, sir? There's a great Leicester channel there. Brendan is on the lash in the tune. I mean, I think it is all newspaper. Fofana apparently is linked with them. I've seen some of their fans saying they want Jamie Vardy. I mean, sensible owners will go, right, we're in. Let's just take a season, and this is, I think, is what a lot of the sensible Newcastle fans are saying: is let's take the rest of this season, consolidate. Yeah, okay, maybe Bruce is going to go, but I think they've got to have a long term structure, because who are they going to get in January? Well, whoever they're going to get, they're going to be added £10 million on now. They know the richest club in the world's coming knocking on the door. Teams are going to up the price. So they're going to be paying over the odds. So it'll be interesting to see how they do deal with it. Anthony, good evening, Anthony. Arsenal fan, welcome along. How the devil are you? Big up, Chris. It won't surprise me if they get Steven Gerrard as manager, like Rodgers did with Celtic to Leicester. He's Sliggy's second favourite, possibly. Do you think, because I was listening to TalkSport the other morning and they have Simon Jordan on. I love him and Jim White. A lot of people hate him, but I love him. I just think he gets that big spoon, sticks it into the pot of whatever story, and he stirs it. But the thing you've got to respect with him, he's owned a club. He knows how these things work. And he's basically said, yeah, it's good for Newcastle, it's good for the fans, but it's actually almost a bad thing that it's such a big takeover, because they are going to up the price. Because, you know, you as an ex-player, if Chelsea approach you, Julian, when you were at your height, say, do you want to come and play for us? You go, oh, London, that's quite nice. If Manchester City go Manchester United, you might go, oh, yeah, Manchester, you know, the Happy Mondays, and they've got the Sound of Manchester and all that, and Liverpool's not so far. And Newcastle. So to attract you to maybe out of the three, they've got to pay that extra on top of the extra that's already being asked by the club because they know it's Newcastle. It is just going to bump the prices up across the board, isn't it?
It is, and I think Manchester City particularly suffered with that, obviously with the takeover and where they were at the time, and you know, you could see the ambitions, and obviously there was, like, you know, it was a there was no bottom to the pot, I don't think, of money they had to spend. And I think they had to cope with that for a while, but then they just become... And I think now is like the Champions League, and obviously that silly Europe League, you know, Super European League was talked about. I think the you know, Europe's become smaller as clubs are concerned. So, you know, Newcastle will be in there and they will be quoted more, but only in line with probably all, you know, your PSGs and your Barcelonas, Madrids, Milans, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas I think, you know, going back 20 years when Newcastle were... you know, were really flying, it was probably a different proposition then, because I think at that time, you know, the England players had been to Spain, they'd been to Italy, and then the Premier League was the massive, massive, you know, draw, and everyone was coming over here. And that was the time where, you know, like, you know, your Middlesbroughs had the money with Steve Gibson and Brian Robson in charge. Yeah. And that was the persuasion then, do you want to come up and play up north, you know, on a December afternoon? And,
yes.
But I do think that dynamic's changed a bit now in the fact I just think Europe's a tighter community football-wise. So I don't think it'd be an issue then. Yeah, they will be quoted more as soon as they're in for anybody. And I think, you know, like I say, the manager that they pick and the recruitment of the players in the January window and then obviously the summer will be sort of not crucial because they must give someone some time to turn it around from where they are now to expectations of, you know, probably top eight, top six. But they'll want to invest, I think, quickly. And I think they want to show the fans. I think they feel the fans' pain. I think they're not daft people. They're very clever, smart business people who see that Newcastle town has got, you know, the town itself has got so much potential with the fan base. And they'll want to, I think they'll want to give him a good news story very, very quickly.
Yes.
You know, and that comes with the manager, the first player they sign, you know, marquee players and all that kind of thing. So, you know, like, I agree with you. It should be a long-term project. I think they'll just want some good news stories quite quickly.
Is it too soon, before we move on to the next topic, is it too soon for Brendan to think about moving? I mean, he's got... you know, he had the reputation when he came from Celtic that always walked out on Celtic, that was his club that he loved, blah, blah, blah. And we know that if we're realistic, and I've said this, Brendan is not going to be with Leicester. He's not going to be an Alex Ferguson. I don't think he'll be with us for years. He's come to Leicester to rebuild his career and show what he can do. This season will be interesting because he's had two very good seasons. He's won us the FA Cup. He's got us into Europe. Not going well. Let's see how he handles this. If he walks out on us now, is he going to get a bit of a reputation, or has he done his probation and now?
Well, I said we agreed too much last week, Chris, and we needed to disagree more. And I'm going to really disagree with you on this one. So from my sort of point of view with Brendan, who I think did a great job, you know, did a good job at Liverpool, talked about, you know, that season he had and all that. I think with Celtic... you know, at the time they were the dominant team, and I'm not saying any manager could have gone in there and done what he did, but he did a very good job. And, you know, they were, he maintained them as the top team. And I think he came to Leicester and it might have been a project to him, but they were a team, you know, obviously after winning the league, the potential, he sees the owners. In my opinion, he would be an absolute mug to leave Leicester City now. And I think, personally, the only way he will leave Leicester is if he is, if he leaves by mutual consent or is sacked. I don't think he'd be sacked, but I think by mutual consent. I can't think that in his mind he thinks he can go to Newcastle and make it a bigger club than Leicester right now. It's a massive task, massive pressure. He's in the middle of a fishbowl. And I'll tell you something now, that is, it's a tough, tough challenge, you know, for anyone to take on. And I think he'd be a mug. And I think, you know, where are we now? Obviously, we're a bit lower in the league, but I think we're still top eight, top six club. He's not going to get the Liverpool job again. He's not going to get Chelsea. Yeah. Maybe got a chance of the Spurs in the future if he does well. He's not going to get Chelsea, not going to get Man U, not going to get Man City. So, you know, for me, he's at the right club. I think he's at the right club with the right owners. We've spoke about this many a time. I think he'd be, like I say, a mug because he's in such a good place. And what, for me, he needs to do is, you know, obviously they've got to turn this season around because it's not started the best. And this will show, you know, his ability and his mettle as a coach and a manager. To leave now, for me, would be, I think it would be, I don't think he would leave. So while I'm saying this, I'm not envisaging this is what Brendan said. But what I'm saying is, I think if he left now, it'd be like he can't do this job. Yes. So I'm just going to move on. Yes. And I think it would, because then if he went to Newcastle and failed, and I think then really people would start to look and say, "Oh, do you know what? You did that. You left that. You left that. You left that." Then I think it would become a talking point. If I'm honest, I think, you know, it'd be a really bad decision for him. You know, the next manager. So they talked about Gerrard. Is he ready for that amount of pressure? Because it will be unbelievable pressure. For me, I think it's probably more likely a big European, you know, maybe a Conte or somebody like that to come in who's been used to that. And how long they'll last, it might be ridiculous because we all know, you know, we're talking about the Watford last week.
Yes.
How long their managers last. So, he can't leave. He can't leave. No. I think it'd be a disastrous decision.
I need to come up with some topics we're not going to agree on, aren't I? I really, really am. I mean, to me, what Brendan Rodgers did at Celtic, okay, yes, he did the treble, etc. But for most of the time he was there, and we know that Scotland is Celtic or Rangers, for most of his time there, he didn't even have a Rangers because they'd been dumped down to the fourth tier and were slowly making the way back up. So he had to be a manager of Joe Kinnear / Harry Bassett kind of stature to cock that up. So what he did as at Celtic, yes, it was good, but not as impressive as maybe the Celtic fans like to think. But do you think... And going back to, say, Man United here, when they got rid of Ferguson, do you need to be the man who follows the man who follows?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're talking about Brendan at Celtic, it could have been Mike Bassett, never mind Harry Bassett. But, it's a massive task because, again, you know, we've experienced this, you know, this uplift in the last few seasons. And like we talked about right at the beginning of the show, you know, Newcastle have had this slump for years when they've been up there, you know, with the Keegans and the Dogleashes at the helm, you know, etc. Bobby Robson and the expectation and the fantastic players that, they've had on the books. You know, you look at the Ginolas and the Shearers and the Andy Coles and all that. And then they've had to, you know, sort of wind it back a bit and just put up with this. And then now it's like a new dawn, and it's every Newcastle now is thinking that next season they're going to be at least challenging for the Premier League, which we all know is not that easy. But that is the expectation on the new manager coming in, and I think that's massive, and I think it needs to go to a very, very, you know, it'd be someone like, and he's not going to be there because he's a Real Madrid manager, but someone like an Ancelotti who's been round and, you know, dealt with that pressure in different countries. It's got to be a big, big name. And, you know, I don't envy the person who goes in it. It's a massive, massive job. And if they pull it off, you know, they'll be loaded for a long time to come.
I mean, do you think with Ancelotti, when he walked out on Everton, I think Conte, who's I don't think he's working at the moment, seems to be the obvious choice for them. And like you say, it's got to be a big name, hasn't it?
It's got to be someone who's used to dealing with the, you know, these days, the pressure of the media, the pressure of the home fans. You know, we've seen Steve Bruce stood there the other week with the just fans booing him. I mean, that, you know, it can't be nice. And it needs to be someone who can come in and, you know, like Benitez has gone to Everton and really changed the expectations of the club on an absolute shoestring. But, you know, this guy's got to come in with a, you know, big wallet in his back pocket and spend some money and produce results from it. And I think that takes someone of vast experience who's probably, you know, managing a couple of different countries, must have won a few things. You know, it's like I say, I mean, I love Steve Gerrard. I think he's been up there very quietly. It's out of the way in Scotland, got on with things and done an amazing job. And he is going to be, I would assume one day he's going to be Liverpool's manager.
I think we all sort of see that in him.
But is he ready for this right now? I mean, he might be. He might be, but you know, I'm not so sure. I think it's got to go to someone a bit bigger with a, you know, a broader CV.
Let me just say to any Newcastle fans that are watching tonight, Peter Taylor is back managing at Welling. So, and I tell you what, the other thing, I think you still got Alan Pardew on your wage bill. I don't know if you've actually finished paying him off for his 25-year contract or whatever was given to him. You might be able to bring him in. We're going to move on. I'm just going to leave you with this thought on Newcastle. Tell you,
honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Indeed, Kevin. Oh God, I love that. I love that. Right, moving on. We need to move on. Part three, which I'm desperately trying to find, and here we are. Transfer talk. You know, there's a lot of transfer rumours now with Newcastle, and there always is rumours. You know, we've got 24-hour news channels, sports channels, blogs, shows like this, and everything to fill with talk and what have you. So there's always going to be rumours. But I just wondered, as a player, when you hear, let's say, that the team you're playing for has been linked with another defender, how does that make you feel?
It's not great at all. And, you know, I've got a perfect example, and it was at Leicester. And it just makes you feel that, you know, the manager doesn't rate you. You know, because if he's looking to put you know, someone in your place or buy someone in your position, then he obviously don't think you're, you know, performing to the levels that he wants you to perform at. And the great example for me is Matty Elliott, who is still a friend of mine now, who I love playing. We love playing together. You know, he always liked to play with me. We had a great understanding on the pitch, but the way that the gaffer played, we rarely played together unless it was, you know, due to injuries. It was either him played or I played. And like I say, big mates, get on great. But I remember him being linked with us, and then I know Souness was trying to sign him for Southampton, and showing my age now, I was flicking, you know, I was watching the teletext pages flick through and he was having talks with Southampton, and the next thing it was that, you know, he'd signed for us, and I remember like lying on my settee, just like, you know, in the afternoon watching the teletext, you know, drift by, and that happened, and straight away I think, right, you know, that's not good news for me. And it, you know, obviously it affects you because you think, you know, he's going to start the next game, I'm not going to play. You know, what's my position then? And, you know, when he came in, you know, the gaffer didn't really talk to me about it. He arrived, I think he made his own debut. He had a great game again. I think it was Wimbledon at home, had a really good game. And like I say, great lad, great player, love him to bits. And we had, you know, we've always got on, which is strange in that scenario. But, you know, the arrival of him, you know, shortened my career at Leicester and obviously meant I made less appearances for the club. So disappointing for myself. Like I say, you know, it's nice that actually someone who did it, who I got on with, because if someone comes in, you don't get on, then it's just doubly bad, isn't it? But, you know, it's a tough thing because, you know, directly it's pointed at you. And then, you know, the doubts then creep in. And then when you do play, talked about this before, that, you know, the confidence that you have, you don't take your normal game onto the pitch because you think, you know, if I do this bad and when he's back from injury, I'm going to be out again. And there's a thousand things running through your head, and it's not a great thing for a player. And like I say, went through it, and, you know, I think I left, you know, it was about a year later. But I mean, the fortunate side for me, which ended up badly actually, was that he was cup tied, and I played all the League Cup fixtures apart from the final. Obviously, Matty was cup tied, so I ended up getting a bit more game time that season. But yeah, it affects you mentally, definitely.
If you know Matt, will you tell him I don't bite? I'm trying to get him on. I'm trying to get him on the channel, and he is.
He's very shy, you know. He's very shy. You must see that in the way he played.
To be, yeah, I've seen the blood dripping down. Is I actually know the guy that helps run the ME Sports and etc. And he actually said the same. He said he's very shy. He's not out there like most ex-footballers. Don't know why I thought about you when he said that, but just give him a nudge. Tell him I'm a nice guy and I won't bite. And the other thing I was going to say on this point is, when you sign for a club, the manager must have a big influence on, you know, you making whether you want to go to that club or not. You know, like the Brian Cloughs, the Martin O'Neills. Yeah. You sign almost as much for the manager as you do the club. But then again, when they're being linked with being sacked and et cetera, again, does that get to you? Do you take that as a player personally? Do you try and give that extra 10% for them?
I mean, you know, I always think players just give their all every week, and sometimes they don't play well. You know, often they will, and then they'll have some downsides. So, I mean, I think personally, when I signed for Leicester, I'd been at Wednesday for 3 years and not got much game time. And in the last year I was there, I got more game time than in the other 2 years. But, you know, I still wasn't in the frame as a regular first team player. So it was a fact that I needed to move on, and I needed to, you know, I dropped down into the Championship. And, you know, that was part of that decision. It wasn't so much that it was Martin, it was the manager, I knew it was a good club, I knew they were in a decent position, you know, so it was going to be better for me as a player. I'd spent far too many of my younger years playing reserve team football, as we, you know, we talked about earlier, and I felt I needed to, when I've been out on loan, I played all the time, obviously, and then you feel like you get to a point, you think, I need to go and play somewhere, I'm you know, more than likely going to play in the first team. But then I've had it on the other side when I was at Bristol City and John Ward was the manager and played the first 17 games of the season. A new manager came in and I never played again for Bristol City in the rest of the season. So I played one game for the new manager. He decided that was it for me. And then, went out on loan a few times and then I left to go to Luton. So it is difficult. The change of manager is very, very difficult because you can get a manager who comes in with a change of style. And you can get a manager who maybe over the years has seen you and not rated you, and he comes to the club, you know, and for some players, it might be a manager that comes to the club and thinks, oh, I wonder why he's not playing, because I've always liked him. And, you know, it can be a massive, massive, you know, plus for certain players. And that's the, you know, that's the volatility of football at any level. I think particularly lower leagues, but at any level in football, that you know, really, really, you know, does affect you.
Yeah. Yeah, Rob says there, Julian, was it black and white TV as well as teletext?
I think it was black and white teletext when I used to book my holidays, but I can't remember further back than that, Rob.
I even now I get chills go down my spine when that word teletext is mentioned. So I just cannot stop thinking Wickham Wanderers and then getting their striker off teletext who went and beat us and scored the winning goal, obviously. Rob, I think I'll give Julian your address. He'll be round to see you with his mates.
Oh no.
He's very handy with the golf club. Just be warned. You know? Okay, we're going to come on to the last topic and then we'll get to some of the questions, but we'll be right back. Yeah, pleased to announce as of a week today, not only on a Tuesday is it going to be my night with the ex, but it's also going to be the night I'm on the BBC. Not literally, but the BBC Leicester City homepage. Every week I'll be having a comment on there about what's gone on over the weekend. So check it out. BBC homepage, they've redesigned it. It's where all the news is on everything Leicester City. And it's very much fans interactive now with polls and questions, etc. And then when I say polls, I don't mean the nationality. I mean the questions, although there may be some Polish viewers. But yeah, I'm going to be on there every Tuesday night. So so pop along there and see what I have to say and give it a tick, a thumb up, please. Right. Tonight, England played. But I've got to ask this. Are we playing too many internationals? I thought we were getting rid of the friendlies, and yet we played a friendly the other week. We were 3 weeks into the season and we had an international break. When do the players get a break? And I know that, you know, I'm used to say, well, you know, they're on this much money and they surely can play twice a week, but they are with Europe and the cup games. We have a break, and oh yeah, it's great timing for Leicester. We've got an international break. The players can get back, you know. No, the players can't get back together again because they're all split all around the world playing for their international teams. And then you've got Soyuncu, who had his confidence knocked when he got, you know, red carded for Turkey. He got COVID when he came back, so he couldn't play for us for a bit. Northern Ireland are wanting Johnny Evans when he's still injured, so how can he go and play for them? Iheanacho only got injured the other day. I mean, surely they're just getting in the way, aren't they, Julian?
I think they are. I think the friendlies, for one, I mean, some of them sort of beg a belief with, you know, with the teams we're playing. I mean, and I even think with the, you know, with the qualifiers, and it might sound harsh, but I always think they should sort of, you know, like they have a pre-qualifying for the Champions League, they should perhaps have a pre-qualifying, you know, for the World Cups and the Euros, because, you know, it's ridiculous as going to play, you know, some of the teams that we have to play. And I know they've got a bit savvy in the last 10, 15 years where they, you know, make things very, very difficult for you. But it's not really a competitive match and not really, you know, I don't think what you want to see in a, you know, in an international match. It's not what I want to watch. I want to watch, you know, two good teams going at it. And I genuinely think that they should have to pre-qualify to get to the next stage and then get with the seeded teams to actually qualify, but, you know, earn their right to be there. So I do another think one, that. And sometimes with the friendlies, I think that, yeah, there is too many, you know, the England team, I know it's difficult, they don't have that much time together, but, you know, sometimes they pick a team and you think, why have they gone to, you know, they need to be playing against Italy or Spain or France or, you know, whoever. And it, you know, when they play someone a bit lower down, I think I don't see the point in dragging the players, like you say, away from the clubs. It'd be nice for the clubs to have a break and still have the players and get to work on a lot of things and, you know, get some, you know, injuries back fit and what have you. So, yeah, personally, I think there are too many, to be honest. And like I say, I think with the competitive ones, we should filter it down a little bit.
I think the problem with that is you're going to get a lot of clubs, if you do give them a break, will jet off to Hong Kong to play a bit, play a game. So it can be a bit of self. We've got another topic here that we agree on totally. What's going on with us here? We're just having a Julian Chris loving here. I think that's what it is. But yeah, I mean, you know, we've got the Nations League thrown in there, which France have just won. We got through to, I don't know, was it the quarters or something, but that was supposed to get rid of meaningless friendlies. But I'm looking at the like you said, I was saying, why don't we have a position like that? And then somebody said, oh, you sound like those teams that wanted the ESL and all this. But look at our group now. You know, there's England, Poland, fair enough, two decent teams there. Albania, Hungary, Andorra and San Marino. San Marino have not won a game. They've not got a point. They lost to Andorra. They've scored one goal and they've conceded 32. I mean, how can an England team going out, what is Gareth going to learn by that? Why, like you said, I can remember when we had to go to Italy, I think Glenn Hoddle was manager, to qualify for the World Cup, and we had to get a draw. And there was England and Italy were in that group. And I can remember, is it Terry Butcher, somebody with Paul Ince, I think, blood, you know, dropping down his face and dying for his country. And that was a game I wanted to see. I can't be bothered with watching friendlies these days. So why don't they have it like they do with the, with the competitions themselves, groups of four? It works for the Champions League. It works for the Europa League and the Conference League. You've got four teams, and in each of those, you'd have one bad team. You'd have, teams would be seeded according to their history and how well they're doing at the moment. So every group would probably have an Andorra, San Marino. A, it gives them a better chance to live their dream because they're not up against, you know, as many big boys. But it makes for us, A, it's less games as well, but it makes for us better games. I'd love to see England play Italy and be on edge. Will England not get through? Will England get through? And I just get bored with it all.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I agree with on the four teams bit, but I still think those the bottom of those has got to pre-qualify. You know, they've got to show. He's a six. I've just bought some new clubs, Rob. You're in luck. but it's like you talk about the Nations League, and I didn't even watch the final. If it was to be in the European, you know, the Euro final, whoever it was, I would have watched it, whether England are playing or not. But
yeah,
you know, I heard the result the next day. You know, France won 2-1, big deal, and never really batting an eyelid about it. And I think in that they're trying to create a competition to get rid of meaningless friendlies, but they've made a meaningless competition.
Yeah.
You know, so it should be down to the nations. And you know, if we want a friendly, it's got to be against the top club. And if San Marino wants a friendly, it might be against Andorra or it might be against Lithuania or, you know, whoever. Yeah. But it can't be against us. But if they just made, you know, had the friendlies, you know, and going back to golf on a bit of a handicap basis where you had the top teams, you know, and teams are in sections and that's where you had your friendlies. Because, you know, like I said, they've made meaningless competition in the, you know, the Nations League for me because I'm not glued to my TV watching it, which I would be the Euros and I would be the World Cup.
No, I don't say I literally watched 5 minutes tonight. I'd forgotten it was on and I was channel hopping and I couldn't be bothered. Mind you, I'd just conceded the penalty. But yes, like you say, there's also Man United player, just thought I'd throw that in. But yeah, there's also the fact that clubs like San Marino, or say clubs, countries like San Marino, Andorra, Armenia, Liechtenstein, Scotland, teams that struggle, did I say that out loud? Teams that struggle to get through to these competitions. I can remember Peru getting through to the World Cup finals 1 year, which is unheard of. Australia did one thing, but it's all about what UEFA is saying. We're not doing with the ESL, or we don't agree with that. I think it's more about control than anything. We're actually doing with the Europeans and FIFA with the World Cups, because you're guaranteed almost, if England don't get out of this group, we don't deserve to be there. It's as simple as that. And it's the same, you know, with Germany. You look, most of the time, the top teams are in the top two and are going to go through in one form or another. We're not going to see, you know, an Albania or somebody sneak in and get there, because it's stacked up against them. But that's part of the fun, isn't it? Seeing those teams turning up.
Yeah, it is. And I think we've got to go through that process. And I think it's this all about football being fair to, you know, to everyone, to, you know, give them the, you know, the opportunity. But, like, you know, for me, it's like, you know, I've said it before, they've got to warrant being where they are. And I think they need to go through that process to get to that qualifying stage. And, you know, it's just like the Champions League. If you don't qualify for the Champions League and you end up in the pre-qualifying, you know, you're supposedly in with a mix of teams that aren't quite the, you know, creme de la creme. And you've got to prove yourself to get through that to then compete with the best. But what we're saying now is just, everyone's in the same mix. And I don't agree with that. I think, you know, earn the right to get into it. And like you say, groups of four, but earn the right to be that fourth team in that group of four.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you deserve your bit of glory. You deserve your moments of fame. You deserve England and Germany to come to your country and play, you know, and get all the fans in and all that kind of stuff. But right now, it's just everyone in the pot. And then there seems to me like some, you know, pretty sort of worthless fixtures, but they could have their own little qualifiers, which would mean the absolute world to them, which we would see as a game that we'd never watch, you know, with two really low down teams, like Liechtenstein against Gibraltar. And for them, it's a World Cup final, which is great for them. But, you know, for us, it's not such a thing. But if they get through that, then they deserve to be involved a bit later on in the tournament. But, you know, let them go through that process and you know, warrant the fact that they're there.
Yeah. I mean, you look at take our Europa League group as it is at the moment. Moscow, Legia Warsaw, 1 and 2. Mm. You know, if you put that, and they may well go through, and good luck to them if they do. But had that group been a group of six or whatever, they may not being with that chance.
No. And they have both. I mean, you know, the way the results have fallen, you know, for us personally, I think it's a massive task now with, you know, Napoli losing that game as well. You know, that really was the worst thing that's happened to us. Apart from our results aside, that defeat there, because, you know, we could imagine that they're going to go and win the next, you know, three games or something like that, which means we've got to sort of, you know, piggyback them and get through, which is possible that we could do it. It just seems, you know, on current form, that are we likely to follow them? I'm not sure we are. I hope we do.
You and me should be running FIFA and UEFA. Yeah, we'd get it sorted. Right. We're going to just quickly round off with a few questions that have been posted in here. We'll be doing that straight. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, week 8, score predictions. I'm not doing very well in that one, guys. I've dropped. Brad's overtaken me. We are joined tomorrow by a Liverpool fan. I'm still ahead of the guest, so fingers crossed I can stay that way. So let's just have a look for the questions here, just going back down the channels. There was one earlier. Here we go. I can't find it at the moment, but it was basically saying about dementia in football at the moment. Is it a worry?
You know, if it's a worry in football, it'd be a worry for myself. But, I mean, I think I broke my nose about, I think, 4 times it was, and I've had concussion. You know, headed the ball quite a lot. You know, and I know there's a lot talked about it now, and it was a big surprise, I don't mean this in a horrible way, but Terry Butcher came out and said, take heading out of football. And I was quite, you know, really surprised about that. And, you know, like I say, it could be a thing, and it might be something that, you know, hits me later in life that we were never aware of. I mean, I think back in the old days, you know, the level of footballs that my dad used to head with laces in them were a lot heavier and probably did a lot more damage. He's all right at the moment, my old man. So, he's not clever enough to tune into the show. I've got to add that in, but I've been trying to talk him through that for a few weeks now, but he can't do that. But, you know, I suppose, is it the fact, is dementia on the rise, and is it just footballers, or are we associating it with footballers because they played football? You know, it's the same with everything. We've got to look at the statistics. Yeah. And it could be a thing. And if it is, it is a worry, like I say, for, you know, any centre-half, which, you know, that's what you spend, you know, a fair time of you doing on the pitch. Balls into the box, balls out of the goalkeeper's hands, goal kicks. You know, you're always challenging, you know, for headers. And if it is a thing, then it's a thing, and it's going to be a bit of a concern. Yeah. But I think there's probably a lot more research got to go into it, and a lot more cases come up, because I think there's a lot of people probably getting dementia who've not played football and not had blows to their head, you know, and we're all living a lot longer than we did, you know, X amount of years ago. So
yeah. How should we be dead by now? It's a wonder. But, I mean, you may look at me and think, yeah, you look dead, you know.
But it's a good question, Rob, and I think, yeah, that, you know, there is a concern now. I mean, I don't particularly worry about it now. I think my loss of memory normally comes from a couple of too many pints after a game of golf. So, you know, that's
if you get hit by a golf ball, you know it more than a football. I think it's good though that they've stopped it at a younger age, I think, because obviously your brain's, you know, still developing, and it's, you know, I think
the thing is with, you know, football happened, and it's been going along for a long, long time, and people have not really looked into this. And as we go on with modern day medicines, and then there's more people looking into things, you've got to look at every different angle for, you know, different things and different outcomes. And like they say, obviously there's quite a few famous cases of people with dementia and stuff like that. And so, you know, it's got to be looked at, you know, really, really closely. And like I say, you know, personally, you know, in that respect, you know, I feel okay at the age of 50, but, you know, would it hit me later in life? I don't know. And would it because of be football, or would it be natural again? You know, I'm not sure, but I think it's great these days that the science that follows absolutely everything that we do. And if, like, you know, if it could be proven that it was a case, then obviously it would affect the way that we let our juniors play football and yeah. and probably the way the professional, you know, yeah. game is played at the moment.
Who are you again? Sorry, no. Scott says here, as much as Brendan has done well, is it his tactics that aren't getting through to the players, or maybe the coaching staff not good enough?
I mean, Scott, I've only managed very low down, but I always felt that every decision I took was my own decision, because I think I always felt if I was going to get sacked, I'd rather get sacked for a decision I made and not one of my coaches made. So, so in that, I mean, Brendan has got enough experience. He will have absolutely, he'd be very, very clear in how he wants the team to play and how he wants individuals to play. And I think the coaches really just help him project that, you know, in a training session, in team talks, when they do the analysis. I always think a manager is very single-mindedly clear in what he wants to do. I might be wrong, but I don't think it's down to the coaches. As we spoke about last week, my thing was, you know, the formation that was successful last year that we were forced into due to injuries. Should we go back to that? And where do we sit with that? And I think right now, Brendan needs to find the right formation with the right players. And again, with, you know, Harvey Barnes coming back, who's a winger, and then all of a sudden you think, well, I can't play a back three because then I can't play a winger, or do I play him in the number 10? And where do we play Perez? I think he's got to forget.
I know where I'd like to play Perez.
Yeah, well, I think he's got to forget the individuals and go, what is the best formation with the players that, you know, and what they fit right. Forget about the big names. You know, I've said that about England. England's have passed. You know, it was all about getting 11 very good individuals on a pitch. He's got to forget about that. It's about getting the mix that works right. And that might be a surprising piece of a jigsaw or a play you might not expect to be playing normally, but he just fits into what they're doing. I think they need to find that, and the sooner they do, the better.
Yeah. Terry says here, I both. Question tonight, but would you sign for Newcastle now I've offered? I would. You're asking me? I'll get me boots.
I'll be walking up the A1 later.
I think this is a more serious question from Terry. What was the most important thing when it came for moving, the money on offer or the air of the country to move your family?
Difficult. That's different for me, Terry, I think, because I mean, I think if you're asking that to, you know, a top player, and I'm talking like a Premier League regular, they've got those decisions to make. I think a lot of the time these days, you know, the first thing the player talks about, I mean, the money is massive anyway. And I think if someone nitpicked between, you know, 20 grand a week here and there, because the amount they paid, that's insignificant. Yeah. I think a lot of them just want Champions League football. They want to be competing at the top. They're desperate for Champions League football because it's the greatest stage for, you know, a domestic player to be. You know, the one puzzle that I always had was Joe Hart and why. You know, why not? Because there was a thing where I think a few years ago, Liverpool seemed to be interested in him, but he would have had to take a pay cut. The pay cut would have taken him down to about 70 grand a week. And I'm thinking, if you can get through the winter on 70 grand a week, you know, can you survive? And, you know, come the summer, we'll all be all right. And, you know, that the decisions like that I've seen of players, they really do puzzle me. With myself, it was just progression and, you know, when I was at Wednesday not playing and Leicester came in, there was a couple of options. Leicester was the best option. So it was a no-brainer to sign for Leicester. And again, when I left, we'll go to Bristol City and so on and so on. But I think it's more aimed, Terry, at the bigger players. And for me, I think it's got to be, I mean, they will always go for the Champions League bit. For me, there's nothing better than playing at a club where the manager rates you, you fit into the team, you know, you're adored by the fans. It just ticks all the boxes. And I'm puzzled sometimes when players leave that and they say, I want Champions League football. And they're taking themselves out of a really great position and maybe putting themselves in, you know, and it can all go a bit pear-shaped. Danny Drinkwater.
Yes.
I mean, I'm a massive fan of his. And there was a point of me a few years ago, even when he was at Chelsea, saying he should still be in the England team because I think they should give him an opportunity because I thought he was a great player. And he was great in that season with Conte at Leicester. And then you look at, you know, his aspirations and what it's done to him. And the problem is that, does he care? I don't know, because he's earned that much money at being a failure. after being a massive success. And when I say he's a failure, he's a fantastic footballer, absolute fantastic footballer. But he's made that decision to go to Chelsea and then literally disappeared, you know, off the face of the football planet. And I think that probably answers your question, Terry. That is a decision that has totally backfired on who I think is a wonderful footballer. And I think, is it Reading now?
I think so, yes. I believe he's got a very nice house and a very nice car.
Well, yeah, you know, and that, you know, for me, the amount of money in the game is, does it take the ambition away from some players and does it make them a bit too picky and a bit too chooser? You know, I'm not so sure. You know, are they hungry enough? Because when they've earned enough and they can just go, oh, do you know what, I'm not bothered anymore. You know, it doesn't mean that much. And, you know, 30 years ago, you were desperate for a new contract. Desperate, and if a club came in for you, great, and you earned a bit more money, and you went, and you know, you weren't bothered about what league they were in or what, you know, it was about the progression of you as a player. Whereas it's a lot different now with the cash.
Brilliant, Julian, as always, fantastic show, mate. Thanks for coming on. I'm gonna have to definitely find something next week that we're gonna disagree on. And I'm struggling. I am struggling. I
really it's gonna do. Happen, Chris. It's gonna happen, definitely.
It is. It will at some point. It can't go on. It'll be like Arsenal being taken, you know, being managed by Arteta. At some point, you know, it's all going to go pear-shaped. But no, thanks very much. I'll let you go. No, so you've got time to make a brew, get a drink, and watch the highlights on ITV of England 1, Hungary 1. But no, thank you very much, as always, Julian.
Thanks, Chris.
We will see you next week. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Cheers, pal. Bye-bye.
Thanks to Julian there for joining us. He'll be back next week at 9 o'clock, as always. And don't forget, next Tuesday, we've got this as well. Indeed, we have. We are live. Well, not live, but we're going to get a post every Tuesday on the BBC Leicester City page. And it's the homepage for Leicester City on the BBC. And I'll be having a comment about what's happened for Leicester at the weekend, good, bad, or even ugly. There's plenty ugly about me, I can tell you. We're going to be back tomorrow at 7 o'clock. And with the Prediction League, can I get a few more points this week? Probably not. It's me, Brad, and we have got Doug, who's a Liverpool fan. We've not had a Liverpool fan on yet, so he's been coming on as the guest role. So look forward to that. 7 o'clock tomorrow with the Prediction League. Thanks to everybody that's been in the chat. Thanks to Scott for modding tonight. Welcome along, as always, Scott. Thanks for all you do. It is much appreciated. Don't forget, catch up on this on YouTube. I don't have a plus one. That sounds really sad, doesn't it? But you know what I mean. I'd have a plus one channel. I'd have a plus one either. I got rid of the wife. Now that sounds like I murdered her. But you can catch up on Leicester Till I Die TV on YouTube. Please, if you do, or if you haven't yet, please nip over to our YouTube channel, Leicester Till I Die TV, and click on that subscribe button. I would love you forever. And if you want to listen to us on catch up while you're doing the washing up or mowing the lawn, Leicester Till I Die podcast on Amazon Music, Apple iTunes, Google, Anchor FM, Spotify, and Podcast Addict. Got it right. Yes, got it right. To name just a few. I'm easily pleased, you know. I am easily pleased. Over 9,000 listens on the podcast. Unbelievable, Jeff. Not even been doing it for 12 months yet, and we've got 9,000 listens on podcast. Really, really thank you guys for all your support. Thanks for joining in with the show. It wouldn't be worth doing without you. Still do it though, but talking to myself. See you tomorrow, 7 o'clock. Stay safe. Thanks very much.
Hello, Matt Elliott here. Be sure to watch Leicester Till I Die TV on YouTube and follow all their social media platforms for the latest updates and news on Leicester City Football Club. Hello, Matt Elliott here. Be sure to watch Leicester Till I Die TV on YouTube and follow all their social media platforms for the latest updates and news on Leicester City Football Club.
Leicester Till I Die.
Subscribe, like, follow, and join in now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.